Okay, motherfucker!
What are you looking at, sir?
I'm looking at you, miss.
I'm not the Zodiac. And if I was, I certainly wouldn't tell you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to a very special One Heat Minute Productions podcast. I'm your host, Blake Howard. Sometimes I have a theme. Sometimes I have a desire, a burning desire to talk about a movie that I've been wanting to talk about for years. Sometimes we bring you huge mini-series that are orchestrated over many months, that take lots of script writing and consultation with great creative talent or some of the best film minds in the world. And sometimes you stumble upon a kind of off anniversary. I think everyone's like the anniversary hunting out there online, like trying to find the perfect time to talk about the movie they want to talk about. But the 32nd, as random as that is, anniversary of one of my truly favorite films, I think like a peerless superhero genre masterpiece that blends kind of like the magnificence of kind of late 80s excess and like all the Universal monster movie kind of vibes, smashed the screens and disappointed critics and children, but hung around in their memory for many years and basically like became a fine wine, is Tim Burton's incredible Batman Returns. This movie means so much to me. It's probably my favorite Batman movie, as wild as that might sound. I think it's in the top five of all superhero movies that have ever been made. And I just saw one of the best film minds and a friend of mine online tweeting about it. I'm never going to call it X. That's the only reason I'm still on this hell side. I saw her tweeting about it and I was like, can I coax you into an excuse to just come and gush about how magnificent, how weird, how deeply horny Batman Returns is? And fortunately, she said, you can hear her awesome chuckle there. She said yes. And so without further ado, I welcome the magnificent film writer you see her writing all around the place. She's been writing for Empire recently. In fact, she took a snap of a recent Empire contribution. I tried to find it in Australia because I found a bloody newsagent that had British Empire. And I was 1 month late and was very disappointed. I was very disappointed. It's Priscilla Page. Hello, my friend.
Hello. I'm okay. How's it going?
Yeah, good, good. I'm excited to talk to you too about this movie. I want to start right from the outset and go, I remember how deeply disappointing that this movie not was for me as a consumer when I was a kid. Like because it was around the time that it was released that I really remember that it was in my consciousness. Like I was about 7 or 8 years of age when this movie came out in Australia, so like it was the movie to see. But I remember that its themes, that its tones, that this kind of like monstrous underbelly, these kind of like weird dark corners of our subconscious that all these other characters emerge from in Gotham City, and you know, circus freak gangs, and like the Penguin not just being a crime lord but like a freak. All those things, I remember the parents around me were like, this is, even 80s parents, like, this is on the borderline of what we should be showing the kids. You know, we don't mind the death and Jack Nicholson's sort of psychopathy in the first Batman, but this one has a level of psychosexual weirdness that I'm not quite sure is going to impact them, but maybe it will in a positive way. I don't know.
I feel like, well, first of all, I don't really remember this movie from my childhood.
That's a great perspective. That's I'm excited to talk to you about this then, even more.
I gotta confess, because
no, totally fine.
I remember, like, I don't know, for some reason it's seared in my memory, the VHS tape case from the first movie, because it's just this black box with the little logo on it.
With the symbol, yeah.
And that like iconography is sort of seared in my brain, but I don't remember if I saw this movie. I feel like I would remember. Yeah. You know, I talked to a lot of people who were scarred by it as children. And I've had people talk to me about how they loved it as a kid. And I'm like, if you loved it as a kid, you should really revisit this as an adult because there's so much in this movie that kids couldn't possibly understand.
There's no way you can understand the stuff that's in this movie if you are
A child.
eight.
Yeah,
I'm
so
still
much
struggling.
stuff.
I'm nearly 39. I'm struggling to understand some of the stuff that was making me feel when I watched it yesterday.
I listened to this great podcast with Daniel Waters, and he talks about how the shit that really disturbs people about this movie isn't like the sewers or the oozing or whatever, but it's really like the sexual. I mean, these people are perverts. I
Big
mean,
time.
even the penguins at the end are dressed up in fetish gear. When they're strapped, like the bombs are strapped to
The
them,
bombs,
it's
and
not
they've got their
just.
little marathon man glasses that come down when they need to fire their missiles. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I mean, I wish I had seen this as a kid. I think it was formative. It's like from back in the old days when you could watch stuff that would just like kids were just constantly watching stuff that scared them, you
Or
know?
just
And it was
unreg.
good to be.
There is one movie in my childhood, which is late 90s or maybe early 2000s. I get them confused. I can look it up while we're chatting. American History X
Oh,
was a
God.
movie that, I don't know if we've talked about this in detail. 98, right? So American History X is 98. When I was younger, my brother, I was really lucky. My brother worked for a DVD and or at the time was first like VHS and then DVD distribution warehouse in Australia for like a film distributor. And part of his job, they would send out time-coded videotapes to video stores to say, how many copies of Jurassic Park do you want? They're like, all of them, or how many copies of Batman do you want? Et cetera. So when they send these time codes out, they usually did it for the smaller titles and kind of gave it to them well in advance and said, how many do you want to order of 2 days in the valley? And they're like, none, thanks very much, or just one because we've got some freaks but not a lot. And so they would return those to my brother's workplace and he would bring all of those tapes home for us. So we had like this immense
Oh.
collection of like every movie from the 90s, from Miramax, New Line, everything, which is probably why I'm so weird,
Oh,
because
I'm so jealous.
I consumed all of those, right? And I remember it took until 1998 for my dad to go. He'd watched it with my older brother, who's 8 years older than me, and was like, do not watch American History X. It's too heavy. And I was like, okay. And then they left the house and I watched it. Like, I mean, what are you talking about? My entire life to that point had been like, you can watch Last of the Mohicans when, Wes Studi plucks a man's heart out, and you can watch, Dances with Wolves and people getting scalped and shot and people getting amputated, and you can watch Batman Returns, where like Michelle Pfeiffer in leather kink gear licks Batman's face. That's chill, all good. But don't watch the movie that has like
Ultraviolence.
ultra violence. That's just the one. It's yeah, I think. Ultra maybe is probably the operative word there,
Yeah.
but so I remember Batman Returns not a problem. Just watch it as many times as you want. Oh, he's watching Batman again. That's fine. And my brain is just blowing up. Like what? I'm feeling things. I don't know. I'm disturbed by things. I'm probably having nightmares. I was a kid who did have nightmares, probably because I watched too many fucked up movies unsupervised. But I just remember this movie and it's the sexual interplay, it's the loneliness, like the
So
cavernous
lonely.
loneliness in this movie, and the beautiful, like, it's kind of like it would normally be like subtextual, but like every metaphorical intent that this movie has is the brilliance of Daniel Waters, the writer you're talking about, script is like the metaphorical stuff is like actually text, that the fact that the whole, like, all these subterranean identities and these like tweaked versions of the same personality, like Batman, Catwoman, Penguin, and their little families or not families that arise out of their stuff. They're all the sort of subterranean stuff that Gotham is trying to suppress. And it's just
Yeah.
right there. And it's such a beautiful and powerful metaphor. And I can't get enough of this movie. Every year I watch, I know some people are like, oh, Christmas, watch everyone's a Christmas. But if it's on, I'll watch it. And I can't wait until my kids are way older than they are right now before they watch it.
47.
I can show them a Spider-Man movie, but I'm not showing the Batman Returns. When my son finally finds out that, like, not only is this, you know, was I inspired by Michael Keaton, whose original name was Michael Douglas, and he changed his name to Michael Keaton to inspire his name, and that I have a tattoo from a still in this movie on my body, I'm really waiting for them to harshly judge me because of how pervy and weird this movie is. But I think it's on brand, so we're okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like this is the kind of movie that is good for kids, like a Grimm's fairy tale or something. Yeah,
absolutely.
You know, because I think there is that thrill when you're a kid, when you watch something like this that you know is more adult than you should be watching, and it gives you like a little thrill. And
yeah,
I don't know. I think it's healthy. I don't know if maybe I'd make a terrible parent, but
there we have it, folks. Arnie Silla is recommending Dad Shows Keaton Batman Returns, and I'm taking it.
Show your toddlers. Yeah. But I don't know. It does feel like there's so much that a kid couldn't possibly comprehend, but in a good way. Yes. But I mean, I'm still, like you were saying, I think we're the same age, but it's like you watch that and you're like, there's stuff that even now I'm still like, oh yeah, like I get that now.
Yeah.
Like I didn't get that a couple years ago, but now I understand, you know.
And just, yeah. Also, how good is a movie that sometimes you forget that Christopher Walken's in it? Like, as in just as a top line person, because you in your brain, I don't know if this is you or maybe it's me, but I'm always like Michael Keaton. I'm always like Pfeiffer. Danny DeVito's performance as Penguin is like peerless. You know,
it's so good.
Marvel, you know, you saw that in the Spider-Man. I always forget the third Tom Holland Spider-Man movie, they're into the Spider-Verse for the Marvel movies, was so desperate to have Willem Dafoe, the original Green Goblin, as the villain because Dafoe is so damn good.
Yeah.
That I look at DeVito and I'm like, can you imagine if just other superhero movies had a villain, one villain, not let alone two that this movie sort of has, or three if you count Shrek, how good his performance is. So like when I'm just passively thinking about it, it's floating through the, you know, the well of the stuff that's going on in my brain when I'm not thinking about anything, I then forget, like, not only is Chris Walken in this, he's one of the greatest character actors ever, but he's Donald Trump in this movie, actually.
Yeah.
He's so good. Like, it's actually a legitimately unreal.
It's a triple Trump.
It is a triple Trump.
Because there's Max and Chip, and then I would argue even, like, the Penguin is sort of...
Yes. Yeah,
they're all sort of Trumpy.
Especially when he's putting pins on his new political helpers' lapels. Very Trumpy there. But yeah, triple Trump. That's so funny. And legendary guy from, I actually didn't realize this until yesterday. Like my favorite guy from Jean-Claude Van Damme's Bloodsport, Andrew Briniarski, plays Chip. Trump's son. Like, you remember in Bloodsport, that big bikery guy who's got like the goatee and like the messy hair? I think that's the same guy. Maybe I'm wrong, but yeah, anyway.
I'll have to look this up because...
I'm going to have to look him up. I'm sorry. I might be getting him...
I don't remember Chip.
Yeah, Chip. Actually, no. He's in Street Fighter. He's in Any Given Sunday, Texas Chainsaw Massacre from 2003. He plays Leatherface. He's like...
Damn.
They like dress him up and put a blonde wig on him, and he's like Trump Jr. Essentially, he's Chip, but he's so fantastic. Anyway, yeah, so I forget sometimes how amazing the rest of the performers are in this movie.
Well, I think the movie really belongs to Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yes,
it does. I was posting stuff about this the other day. So I'm repeating myself, but I feel like this is a covert Catwoman movie.
Big time.
You can tell that that's where both Waters and Burton, that's like where their obsession lies. And it really.
And Keaton.
Go ahead.
And Keaton, he's up for it. He's up for it. He's like, yeah, make it the Catwoman movie, because then I've got a... I feel like Keaton saw that he could have like a weird conflicted kindred spirit that would always be a thorn in his side for future movies. He's like, oh, this is going to be magnificent if she comes in, because Bruce is in love with her.
Yeah.
And right now he's okay with him, with her like brutally electrocuting and murdering Shrek. And, you know, he's fine.
I respect
with that.
It.
He's like, yeah, and it's not what I would have done, but, you know, no one's going to be the wiser.
Well, he fights her on it. He fights her. He's like, don't do it. Who do you think you are? And she's like, I don't know.
Yeah, she's but I love that. That is exactly, I think you're spot on. It's like not a, I think it's an overt Catwoman movie. It's a great Catwoman movie, but I think that that triumvirate, Waters, Burton, and Keaton, see like if we make her, she's someone who can come back. Like if we establish this character, we have this instant chemistry and conflict that can help tilt the balance of other great movies. It's like my perennial theory of like, if, you know, may he rest in peace, the great Heath Ledger, you totally know that a third Batman movie with Heath Ledger still alive and just hanging around in prison is a bunch of people, you know, whoever they are, sycophants trying to get the Joker to be released, and then him coming out of prison and just burning Gotham City to ash, and Batman having to make a choice whether he kills him or captures him again. You know, so I feel like Catwoman could have been that for a third Burton Batman movie, which is like, she's just there. Are they going to be in love? Are they going to make bad choices? Is she going to tilt the favor of the latest villain that's emerging on the Gotham scene because it's relevant to her interests or not, or whatever? I feel like that it's just totally like this huge setup for the most devastating lack of payoff. And we move into the Joel Schumacher franchise and it's the different movies, the different thoughts, the different feelings.
Yeah, I think that movie was too perverted. And so they were like, we got to get Schumacher to...
Yeah.
But then he was too goofy. So then they brought in Nolan, who, I mean, I like his Batman movies, but they're definitely, one of the funniest thing that Daniel Waters said on this podcast I listened to is that he actually went to some kind of Q&A. There was a screening of one of Nolan's movies. And then during the Q&A, I guess Nolan was ragging on Batman Returns, was sort of like, I understand, we love the first Burton Batman, but like, I do not get the second one. I'm not exactly sure what all he said, but Daniel Waters said, like, I was just waiting for someone to call me out and for there to be a spotlight on me, and then a sniper takes me out. But it's like, it's easy to see why Nolan doesn't get it, because it's a kind of everything that his Batman movies are not.
Yeah.
You know,
grounded.
He's got like a very sexless. His Batman is a lot chattier, I realized.
Yes.
You know, he's always talking. And then Keaton understands that the power of Batman is that if he shows up in the suit, he should speak as little as possible.
Yes.
Which
and
I
you
love.
Have that,
it's
and you
perfect.
have those beautiful, the lighting and cinematography, those beautiful lights that just go on his eyes. Like, so he's in the midst of the shadows,
yeah,
and you see the silhouettes, and then his awesome blue eyes just like, are just the things that pierce through the darkness and saying so little. It's totally antithetical because Nolan wants a grounded reality Batman, and he's scrutinizing it from like a logic perspective, and that's not like, as in, oh, how would people not know that this weird loner Bruce Wayne, like, and it's like, no, people probably, and even Keaton recently is like, Bruce Wayne's weird, and he's the guy. Like, he's the character that I focused on the most. The suit does so much for you when you're in it. It's just surrendering to the suit. He's like, Bruce Wayne's a weird, lonely guy. He's weird with everyone. He says the wrong things. And he's like, when he goes, oh, we've met before. And she's like, oh, have we? And he goes, oh, I'm mistaking myself for somebody else.
Yeah.
Like, that's just the greatest
line.
It's just a great line. It's like such a fun, it's like, yeah, in this universe, he's a weird guy who pops up at big things and then he bounces for months and no one notices, but he's super rich and he has a lot of influence. But I really do like, I like what Keaton does with Bruce Wayne, because he takes him to a weirder place than most of the others. And I think that he's a weird guy. He is weird if we get right down to it.
It's a weird thing to want to do if you're that rich and you can do whatever you want and you decide, I'm going to dress up like a bat and fix this city. But what I love about this is that this movie really kind of taps into Batman being the boogeyman and sort of like it takes place in a world that does not feel at all rooted in reality. It feels like Gotham is a projection of Bruce Wayne's mind and he's so repressed that his id has become embodied and become all these different weird little villains who are terrorizing an entire city and him. And it's like, there's never any reconciliation of all those disparate parts. It's just this like nightmare tragedy that keeps replaying over and over.
I love that, because the thing that I've always loved in the best Batman stories, and I think I love all of his rogues gallery for this, is, and Spider-Man has this too in some respects as well, like in the great ways that it's told, it's like Batman villains are all just very much like reflections and refractions of Batman. Weird, like emphasis on certain characteristics, if you like, or motivations, you know, like the isolation and loneliness of Selina Kyle, and then the tragedy, which is all like happening directed at her rather than at someone else, causes her revenge motivation that drives her in this movie as in Batman Returns as Catwoman. And obviously it has the sort of supernatural element as well. But then you've got the Penguin, who is a kid who is abandoned by his parents. Now, Bruce is abandoned by his parents, but his parents are murdered. So it's not their
choice to dump him in the sewer.
Yeah. They didn't dump poor Brucey in the sewer. But that whole point of it turns it around, it shifts, and he becomes then, I'm going to build a gang. I'm going to have power and I'm going to orchestrate my way back to the top to have influence. But it's all from a dark and vengeful perspective because of that inversion of those things. And I feel like so many of the characters are like that. And I love what you said about Batman being the boogeyman, because literally I feel like, you know, like the simulator in Monsters, Inc., where there's this perfect room of a kid's room, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like this perfect, succinct, you know, thing. I feel like Gotham City is in that room. And the whole of where Batman Returns actually takes place is under the fucking bed. Like circus freaks, cat women, penguin people, and a
poodle ladies.
And a boogeyman. And a boogeyman and little, you know, kink penguins. It's like, it's all subterranean. It's like this exactly as, Danny DeVito's Penguin says, he's like, you know, what you discard, like we discover, you know, what
you flush it, I flaunt it.
You flush it, I flaunt it. Like that's, it's this leaking out from this subterranean thing, and trying to keep that in check so that this pristine view of this perfect gothic city above can, you know, continue unawares of all this darkness. That's what Batman's doing. He's the boogeyman that's like at the door. But in this movie, it's all that's leaking out. And I just think it's so fantastic. But again, that's probably why I'm reticent to show my kids, because it does have some genuine nightmarish in it imagery, you know, kids being taken away and just the, you know, and
the penguin's mouth.
The penguin's mouth just in general, and the black that comes
just
down.
Just oozing inexplicably. Yeah.
Yeah. the soiled onesie is enough for nightmares too,
me
now. It's
the
just
dingy long johns.
The most disgusting thing I've ever seen.
I was hyper focusing on that this time though. I was rewatching it. Like, oh,
I mean,
4K
helps.
This isn't inspired.
4K helps everything very pristine when you're watching it, let me tell you. But it's one of those things where I just think from almost every standpoint, like even just sound choices, sound decisions, cinematography, like there's so many times in my life where I've just like inexplicably gone, someone will say something and I go, oh, but you can. Oh, but you will. And they're like, what? I'm like, oh, I'm sorry.
Such a specific.
The penguin came out of me. I don't, he's there sometimes. I don't know But that even just everything, little lines, aesthetic choices and composition and production design, and then the actors that are just delivering, that are on a heater this entire movie. Yeah, it's such a special one. I don't think it's ever truly going to, it's always going to be this beautiful and wonderful oddity and curio in the genre. But I think the more people in our generation that this movie is the true like representation of like the peak of kind of these superhero movies is we're always going to kind of be around. We're going to be able to cut through some of the, just the chorus and noise of people who just obsess over, I mean, in my mind, and I'm going to say this, you don't have to say anything. I think Marvel fandom is a garbage fandom. I think the Star Wars fandom is a garbage fandom. I think sometimes DC is absolutely a garbage fandom, especially since the whole Zack Snyder bro thing has like occupied those things. The only remaining fandom which is the best, and I will hear none of anything, is the Lord of the Rings fandom. Still is the most wholesome and most beautiful fandom that goes around. But I just think that, or the individual, when you can appreciate the individual movies and you're not wedded to the brand and you're just wedded to style and you're wedded to the characters and you actually relish the chance for the differences that these sort of contemporary archetypes can occupy our screen and be played with and tinkered with. This will be my favorite, you know, in that regard forever, I think. And I love the Nolan movies. They're very different, but I love, I'm so much more enriched that there is a Batman Returns and there's a Dark Knight. You know, I love that both coexist and I'm happy that they do.
Let's see, where do I want to begin?
I'm just protecting you from actually engaging in my slander of all of those fandoms.
Yeah, no comment. I don't know. I actually like a lot of those movies, but sometimes the people do get, I mean, I think that's actually what I love so much about this movie, is that it feels like it came before a time before movies were made by committee, and that these kinds of movies were in service of the fans exclusively and not necessarily how good the story is. I mean, at the same time, like, they talk about how, well, Waters says something like, how he was not in service of Batman on this movie. He was in service of Tim Burton.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's also said something that it's like kind of a Batman movie for people who hate Batman because they just ignored, like, they did. He confesses that they did not get the Penguin at all.
Yeah.
Neither him or Tim Burton had a grasp. I think Sam Hamm's original draft had him in this. He was kind of this like ornery aristocrat who just pulled off heists, and it didn't really grab them at all. And so they just kind of decided to, I just think they riffed on the characters based on what their names were.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then just kind of wrote Tim Burton characters. And I will say that I do love Batman. I love Batman comics. Me too. The Nolan movies so much. I even like Rises.
I am an unabashed adorer of Rises.
Oh, I'm so glad. I remember when that movie came out.
I have a Bane
tattoo. I
knew
so many people who
Priscilla.
Hated it.
I have a Bane.
What?
I have a Bane tattoo.
I'm so happy. We need to do a separate episode, I guess.
We're definitely going to come back and talk Rises, because I'll literally take any excuse. I love Rises. I think it's an amazing.
Yeah. The prison pit stuff alone is just worth the price of admission, I think.
Yeah. Anne Hathaway is an amazing comic book accurate, sensational Selena Kyle, like cat burglar, a smart ass, great fighter, all those things. I think Hardy's Bane is just out of control good. He is fantastic. Yeah. And I love so much in Rises. I love it. I will not hear a bad word about Rises. I'm so
glad. Then we're on the same page.
We're completely on the same page.
But I don't necessarily agree that this is a movie for people who hate Batman, because I love Batman, but I'm also not beholden to the comics evolve and change so much that I just don't, it doesn't bother me that
no,
I'm like, I don't recognize this Selina Kyle from the comics, but that doesn't mean she isn't fucking like a great character.
That's exactly what I was going to say, is like, even as a huge diehard Batman fan, like, I love Batman comics. I love the animated series. I love something
So,
in
so
every one.
good.
I love something in every one of the movies. Even if I hate the movie, I love something about it. You know, like, I was
Yeah.
not the biggest fan of the most recent Batman
Oh, really?
movie. No, was not, did not jive with me, but I, God damn, did I love the person who I'm talking to right now writing about the cars and cinematography in Batman.
It's,
May not have liked the Batman, but man,
yeah.
Priscilla's writing on the Batman, and particularly the cars and the music and the cinematography. I was like, yeah, like, we are on the, I mean, no, absolutely no pun intended. We're on the same page completely with that. Like, absolutely. But I agree. I like when something, and I think people forget the Batman in Batman Begins slash, and it is evolving. Begins is a very, it's more Batman Returnsy than either The Dark Knight or Rises. You know, it's got
Yeah,
that
it
kind
feels
of
a
not,
little bit more surreal.
yeah, it's got that, the whole scarecrow element allows them to have this nightmarish Batman under the bed, as, and which I love that you said, like, the Batman's a boogeyman element in it. Like, the whole last act of the movie is got this great, like, you know, when Cillian Murphy's Scarecrow is like, is gassed with his own stuff, and he's being interrogated by Batman, and you see him like appear as this giant leaking demon face. You're like, oh no, that's very Batman Returns. That's very Batman Returns. But
Yeah, I
that
love that.
I love it too. It changes though as the movies progress. And I know a bunch of people who are like, Blake, Batman Begins is my favorite because it has that weirdness. It's not as wedded to the reality of a more sort of, you know, 1970s crime world that the rest of the series is. It's got some extra levels. But yeah, I've always loved that when you're going to take the character and you do something genuinely different, I'm not going to hate you for doing it. It just is about how effective you are as a storyteller to, like, to fit the world around the changes that you make. And Tim Burton's whole, this, he was at the peak of his powers at this time. It's like the world fits with all these weird characters. If the penguin was just an aristocrat, it'd be boring. But if he's a
Yeah.
penguin man with flippers who eats fish and is also like a deep pervert, then we love, you know?
Yeah, such a pervert. He
Such a.
has one of my favorite, one of my, I don't know if it's my absolute favorite, but the line, I'd like to fill her void. It's just so gross.
Oh my word.
Yeah.
Look,
He's
I think I'm going to pump the brakes here. I'm going to pause
okay.
this. We're going to come back and have another chat shortly together about,
Okay.
I think we're going to have to finish off some more Batman Return stuff in case we missed it. And then I'm
Okay.
going to get you back to talk about The Dark Knight Rises. Is that okay?
Sure.
I would love to do that because I think that as a little bonus, I love talking to Priscilla and giving her a shot to talk about some of these movies that I know you've written extensively about. So it's always great to talk to you because I know that you're like, you're in it. They've occupied your brain for a lot of time. So it would be great to talk to you again. It's always awesome to talk to you. Folks, go seek out Priscilla's stuff. Primarily, I would say the best thing to do is subscribe to her Patreon, which I am a part of. She writes beautifully and languidly about a whole bunch of stuff. Very near and dear to my heart is our upcoming contribution to our Sneakers Too Many Minutes series, which we go long. So you're going to hear in the 8 episodes probably lots of Priscilla popping up through those 8 episodes, and probably a big chunk in one main episode together. She's also a great commentary contributor on the Sneakers Plumeria Pictures release of Sneakers, which you can get, which has the great Too Many Secrets slipcover. Have I missed anything about your amazing work? Oh, and as I said at the beginning of the episode, she frequently writes for Empire magazine. So if you're anywhere in the world where you can get that, you can check out some of her great stuff. But is there anything else I've missed that you want to plug before I let you go?
Oh no, I think I'm good. I
Excellent.
came here without plugs.
Plugless.
Yeah.
I'm just plugging because I'm so excited that people get to hear our insanely long and full on geek out on sneakers, which is fantastic. It won't be long for them because they're going to hear it throughout many episodes, but I'm so excited to share that with everyone. thank you so much for coming and geeking out a little bit on Batman Returns for me. Thank you for your great piece that you shared the other day.
Thanks for having me.
You're
it's a
welcome.
Pleasure.
We will find more to talk about. I think we'll have to do a bit of a mixed up one to make sure we didn't miss anything from this one when we release
yeah.
it. But then we'll come back and definitely wrap around Rises, because it's one that I missed in now our current decade project where we're doing movies, you know, your favorite movie from 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Missed Rises. And I would totally, that might have been a 5-hour episode on The Dark Knight Rises. Just me individually addressing all the things wrong with the bad reviews. I'm so happy to talk to you as always.
Yeah, I'm so happy I discovered that we also love Rises.
Oh, yeah.
Because I feel like usually you're one team or the other. You're either like Returns or the Nolan movies. You know what I mean?
No.
But.
I'm right here with you. I'm just showing Priscilla a picture in my office. I've got the Heath Ledger Joker. That's
oh,
right.
Oh shit.
That this painting of Heath Ledger nursing a gun to his head in the hospital room with Harvey Dent. I'm a Batman fan. I like it.
You might want to cut this, but I have like a huge. It's not in this room, but it's like a huge framed poster of Bane.
I love that. I have a Bane. I've got the Bane IMAX poster on my roof in my office from the original one. That's his face. That's my tattoo. So, yeah, it's.
I think that might be the same one I have actually.
Yeah. All right, great. Well,
but, so we're gonna, perfect.
That's the teaser for the next episode. Thank you so much for chatting to me as always. You're the best, and we'll talk soon.
All right, sounds good.